PA Bread, I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Caravelle in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none. The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
If you're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details. The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, second half. Thanks to Jason for swinging in, and for Mike Welsh as well. And we're going to talk to Keith Shamblin. And in fact, as I reach out and bring Keith in, I've been saving for a couple of days. I guess I think it hit Thursday. Kevin Costello. It's unbelievable. Kevin Costello won the tour. Again, he must have won, I think, three years ago? Yeah, 2021. Just amazing. Pretty incredible. First time that anybody has won it twice. And, you know, you do see a lot of familiar names, on the leaderboard every year during the NHC tour, but that makes him eligible for a $5 million bonus. second shot at it. Pretty cool. We'll talk to him before. Well, we'll be in Vegas next Thursday. We start. Yeah, next Thursday. We'll be there for, you know, sort of the prequel, and then the Friday action, get started. You know, we'll do a regular Friday morning show and then come back with the coverage Friday afternoon. It's always so much fun. Then Saturday and Sunday, wall-to-wall NHC coverage, and we'll be kind of a simulcast on Sunday. There's going to be essentially a video feed. Call it a TV show, and in fact, Keith can provide some of the details. Keith Shamblin, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
I'm good. I was leading into your visit by relaying the Kevin Costello craziness, you know, for him to win the tour a second time.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, that's hard to imagine, but good for him. Good for him. He's great, great player, and he loves the challenge of playing in these contests. And gosh, he plays all the time, but it's amazing that he's won it twice.
Eligible for the $5 million bonus if he can win in 2 weeks.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that would be the high, probably the highlight of the first 25 years of the NHC if he were to pull it off. But it's great, you know, two-time tour winner, and virtually guarantees he's a future Hall of Famer for sure. At the NHC. So congrats to him.
Well, as it happens, the seed of reaching out and getting some of the last minute, last minute news and elements visit, we do this pretty much every year. I did sit on Saturday for part of the afternoon here at Gulfstream, did get to sit with one of the great Canadian tables, Ray Arsenault and Lauren Weiss. Ross Gallo was hanging out as well. And Ray and Lauren and Lauren's son, they're all excited. They're getting keyed up.
Well, that's the Toronto contingent. They're annual visitors to the NHC, and it's amazing how successful that group has been. And long time horse players, supporters of Frank Stronach and the Stronach Group and their tracks. But, you know, they've been involved in the NHC almost from the beginning, and they've been extremely successful. So excited to see those guys once again. It's like an annual visit when we meet up at the NHC every year.
Well, and, you know, I came down for the Eclipse Awards and Pegasus Week, and now this fountain visit, and it did. I think Pegasus Week, or even subsequently, I upon getting home, I talked about this new. At this point, it's not new. How many years have we been? Is this the third year with the March date or second?
Third. This will be the third year.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
The fact that that you and the team, Keith, it's got to be a big relief that, you know, for years the Eclipse Awards and then immediately to Vegas for NHC, it was taxing. I mean, the opportunity to get the breather between, you know, these two events has got to make things that much more, you know, relaxed and easier on everybody. And I think it's one of the reasons, you know, the March date has gone, you know, so smoothly for everybody.
Well, it's definitely easier on the team here at the NTRA. You know, we've got to put on a big event in usually in Florida these last several years, the Eclipse Awards, and then travel out west for the NHC. And of course, that happened almost immediately, you know, back-to-back weekends. In fact, some years we even had the NHC before the Eclipse Awards and then had to travel to the Eclipse Awards. So we've done it both ways. It was a hell of a turnaround to do it. Now we're very, very happy with the March date. It's doesn't conflict with any major racing events to speak of, like the Pegasus or others. where we were on that weekend, which was nice to have those big races be part of the NHC, but we don't really want to conflict with any tracks that are trying to have big events at their own facilities on that particular weekend. And of course, the Pegasus, as you mentioned, they have a great handicapping contest of their own. And whenever we had it on the same weekend as the Pegasus, we were competing for a lot of those same players who, unfortunately, for Gulfstream couldn't be there because they were at the NHC on those years. But now, you know, we've kind of cleared that hurdle, and we're thrilled with the March date. And of course, with sports betting, college basketball, everything else going on, it really makes for a unique weekend in Las Vegas and a lot of fun.
Give us some of the elements, final opportunities for everybody to qualify. There's been some notable second seats and some last second heroics, it seems, these last couple of weeks. I've been seeing from whether it's racetrack sponsored or whether it's horseplayers.com or whether it's horse tourneys. I've seen some people that didn't think they were going to get to Vegas. And then, of course, there's the last chance, first chance. What do players have to know here in the waning opportunities to get to Vegas?
Well, we've got one more weekend of qualifying. Of course, this past weekend, I saw where, of all people, Eric Roth, Academy Award yep. winner for the writing the screenplay, played a Forrest Gump and also Academy Award nominated this year for Killers of the Flower Moon. And he also had a role in Dune, Dune 2, that's out last week, I think. He qualified, and he's thrilled, and he's very excited about returning to the NHC. I think winning the NHC would be almost as great for him as winning an Academy Award. It's amazing. So it'll be great to have him back. But we've got one more weekend of qualifying, then we've got the last chance, first chance, and of course, that's going to be last year we had 752 participants. We gave away 28 seats this year. I just made a bet with Michelle Ravencraft. She thinks we'll have over 900 entries. I think we'll easily exceed 800. I took the under on 900, but she might be right, and she follows it a lot closer than I do. So it's going to be a huge turnout, packed room. That event has really taken on a life of its own, and we gave away 28 spots bursts into last year's NHC on the eve of play. This year, we think it'll be even more. This year, we're also giving away 5 guaranteed seats, and that will far exceed that, but guaranteed 5 bursts into the 2025 NHC as part of the last chance, first chance. So, it should be bigger and better than ever, and looking forward to it. It's a great way to kind of kick off the weekend. And we have, just so many people who come in for that event, hoping to strike lightning in a bottle and qualify for the 3-day event coming up that same weekend.
Well, and it might be a little anecdotal at this point. And I probably have to go back and look at the top finishers and then final table or top 20. But there was a period where it seemed like people that were playing in on Thursday and getting in then had a lot of momentum. And there had been a few players historically that had, then parlayed that momentum into success on Friday, Saturday, and into Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd have to go back and revisit the history books, but we always have a number of players who qualify in the last chance, first chance event and make the bump money line because they have a good day of handicapping, and then that carries over into the contest, the NHC. And even if they don't make the final table, they're kind of, if you make the money line after 2 days of of handicapping. You know, you're right there on the, you're one pick away from making the semifinal round and obviously the final table will come out of that semifinal round, but you know, if you can get there, you're one or two picks away from having a huge payday at the NAC, which is great.
Keith, spend a minute while we're doing this and get the topic you know, out of the way. Trying to adjust some rules, you know, some of the frustration of regular players and long-term players in the contest about you know, collusions and you know, those elements. I know, you know, you've been grappling with this for a long time. I mean, what go through that, those rule nuances that released a few weeks ago.
Sure. Well, first of all, we've got an audit system that we're going to have in place that's going to be able to audit all of the players' play. It's conceivable it could be in real time, but we'll probably do it on multiple occasions throughout day one and day two and day three of the NHC, where we'll update the leaderboard and we'll be able to go in and we'll be able to see plays in real time made throughout that period. And if we see patterns, that are, suspicious, we'll react accordingly, and do everything from, questioning the individuals to, considering, disqualifications on the spot. That's one of the updates this year. Last year, we had a bit of a challenge because we had an individual who participated in the NHC, thought he or she saw something suspicious occurring during the event, reported it after the event, after payoffs had already been made to the players. And of course, it subsequently led to the disqualification of three individuals who, as it turned out, had, by and large, the same exact selections on all three of their plays, were colluding, throughout at least 2.5 days of the contest. So it was a pretty easy call in hindsight. It just took some time to verify it. This year we won't have that issue because we'll have real time or virtually real time auditing in place. And for that, I have to thank Marshall Graham, who came up with the software and wrote it and is providing it to us. In fact, we have a call with Marshall this afternoon to talk about it and to finalize all the details. But Marshall, when he saw the plays last year, he quickly identified the three individuals who colluded. And I guess the good news is, from that standpoint, is that we didn't see any other patterns like that. It was just these three individuals, and that kind of surprised me that there wasn't more of this collusion. But that was it was nice to see that, and we really couldn't point to any other activities by individuals. And we looked at a lot of plays, and there just wasn't a pattern of abuse the way there was with these three individuals. So hopefully we'll get beyond that this year. Of course, we've enlisted an audit period, a 10-day audit period, review period. Players will have 5 days to protest plays if they see anything suspicious. Then we'll have an audit period that'll continue for another 5 days, and we'll make all the payoffs from the NTRA offices. We won't be paying out of the cage at Caesars this year, which is another change, but we think a positive one. And it's just, you know, it's impossible to claw that money back after you put it in the hands of the players. Thankfully, you know, this cheating is not widespread. So, but it's still an issue that we want to address and we want to get out in front of, and we're comfortable with all the changes that are being made.
In terms of one of the more quirky scenarios that we've discussed over the years is spousal and sibling and family style agglomerations. That's much tougher to discern. I don't know if you'd call it out of the team play concept. I mean, is there anything to address on that front?
Well, it's not really something that we're going to address. We are looking at it, and we did examine all the plays by family members who, a lot of times sit together, but we don't want to discourage the camaraderie that occurs at the NHC. It's one of the very best things about it is the fact that horse players get together for 3 days or four if they're playing in the last chance, first chance, and get a chance to celebrate this beautiful, tremendous sport and hobby or profession with other like-minded players in a room. And, one of the great things about handicapping and horse play in general is being able to discuss it with your friends or your family. After all that takes place, we expect the individuals to go up, and they're personally responsible. The NHC participants are personally responsible for making plays on their own and not in accordance or in any kind of play with others, either at their table or outside of their table. They're supposed to make their selections individually. It's very hard to police, but we're comfortable that's not occurring. Or not at least to the degree that a lot of people may think it is, because a lot of people see family members and, they immediately question what's going on. Are they collaborating on their plays? Are they teaming on their winnings, et cetera, et cetera? But, that's the way I learned to horse play was through my father and grandfather. And I think that's the way a lot of other people do it. And
sure,
that doesn't mean we're colluding in any way. We've all got our own opinions, but it's one of the best, absolutely best things about our sport, and certainly about one of the best things about the NHC.
Well, the last opportunities, it's Tuesday. So Thursday, one seat, at horseplayers.com, and another one on Friday. Saturday, there's two options, and one of Saturday's is restricted to those that have not qualified yet. And on Sunday, there's one available for those that have not qualified yet. So for those that are anxious and running out of racetrack, if you can't be at Vegas Thursday for the last chance, first chance, you've got basically six more opportunities: Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And this is it. It's crunch time.
It's crunch time, and then of course we've got a new Silver Sunday contest on the Sunday of the NHC on March 17th, where if you're not an NHC participant, you'll be able to play online from your home. And we're going to award five spots to the 2025 NHC. And of course, those will be among the first five in to next year's NHC. And the beautiful thing about that contest is you won't have to compete against any of the wise guys that are at the NHC. They'll all be in Vegas. They'll be playing in their own separate Silver Sunday contest. But the people at home won't have to compete with them. And it'll be a great way to kick off the, 2024 NHC Tour by sending five absolutely new participants cool. to the NHC next year.
I love it. And we should also mention, as I was bringing you on, I said there'll be an opportunity to watch the action from the final table on Sunday as well.
Absolutely. With you and Rick Hamlin, we're looking forward to that. We're going to live stream all seven races, and we'll have some analysis and be bringing handicappers on to join the two of you, and very much looking forward to having you all take us through the final table. We're going to hopefully start a little bit earlier than we have in years past, so we have some better racing to choose, a better menu of final table races to choose from. But it essentially begins shortly after noon and probably go till 3 or 3:30 in the afternoon. Of course, everybody will be playing along in the new Silver Sunday contest, and should be a lot of excitement in the room, and looking forward to the live stream.
Keith Shamblin, everybody. Keith, I will see you soon enough, and looking forward to, I don't know, probably year 8 or 9 of coverage from NHC.
Year 25 for me.
Well, yeah. They're going
to
put you in the founder and builder's wing, as they say, right?
I don't know. They'll put me somewhere, that's for sure.
When are the Hall of Fame Hall of Famers going to be announced?
They are announced. They're Jim Meeks, is a great, great story in and of itself. Steve, Jim is from a little place, Elko, Nevada. It's about 375 miles from Las Vegas. He grew up with no power, no television, no phones on a family farm, and said it was just the best way of life. And he literally learned to read by an oil lamp in the house. Jim has won the World Series of Handicapping in Las Vegas 1 year, and he finished second at the NHC. So, you know, just a great success story. He's been a state steward, racing steward at the Elko County Fair, a 6-day meet for 30 years. He just recently retired not too long ago, so he could devote himself full time to horse racing. Very successful businessman in Elko, Nevada, owns a family dry clean business there that his grandparents started, or his parents started when he was living on the family farm back in the day, and he's continued that on, and a great story. And then Duke Matisse, you know, of the Matisse family, is a new member of the Hall of Fame, and Brett Wiener, probably one of the most successful players at racetracks around the country for since 2009, decade and a half. He's just been it doesn't matter if it's online or on track, he's a threat wherever he shows up. But we'll be honoring Jim, Duke, and Brett at the Champions Dinner on Sunday, March 17th, and very excited for all three of these guys. Very deserving and great stories.
Outstanding. I'm glad we got that in. Keith Shamblin, thank you. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Take care, Steve.
Keith Shamblin, everybody. And I voted, and then I missed that announcement. That's not like me to miss that. I got to go back I got to go back through the mail. Usually it comes from Michelle or from Holly. And, there it is. Absolutely. There it was. It looks like it was on Thursday. Yeah, on Thursday. There's the email. Matisse Meeks Wiener into NHC Hall of Fame. Outstanding. Boy, that's some picture of Duke. They must have, that looks like something you'd see in the post office. Hey! I could have given him a better picture of Duke. Oh, my God, that's funny. Let me get to Andy Serling, and we'll get Andy's take. I did not get a chance. Usually by now, I will have talked to Andy about the stake results. But as it happens, we haven't talked the last couple of over the weekend. Andy Serling, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. I just was making the point as I was reaching for you that I whatever you thought about these races, it's going to be fresh for me because you and I usually have talked about some results, but we haven't from the weekend.
Well, you're in Florida. You're very big in Florida. You know, when you're down in Florida, you don't have time for guys like me. You got your Florida friends. Actually, your Florida friend, he fled to Ireland to get away from you, visiting you when he came down.
He actually
that's
came
really,
back.
That's really the reason that Parada moved. It wasn't he didn't want to get back to Ireland. He just wanted to see you when you come down for a few weeks in the winter.
Well, they actually, John and Matt and Maggie are actually in town. They came. They came by. I think they came to see me. Probably.
Man, that's bad timing.
No, we're not going to hook up. Not going to see them, as it happens. But they are. They. It's just funny you bring up John. It just so happens he's, you know, they're here. He just texted me. Saturday during Fountain of Youth Day.
Why didn't you see him? Oh, you're too important down there. You're a big mocker down there.
I'm a mocker. Yeah. I listen.
Glad handing.
That's me, the original glad handing dandy. speaking of dandies, I see Christophe Clement Saturday, Andy, and I look at him. I said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "You're going to run 1-2 maybe in the Gotham," and he said, "No, I want to be here. I like it here better."
No, he didn't want to come to New York. His baby. Dunker didn't come, so Dunker couldn't come, so he figured he could hide down there.
Exactly.
You know, maybe they should allow him anywhere near the horse. He ran so well. Maybe Miguel should be the only one allowed near.
The horse really did run well, and you know, these wet tracks they make it a little tough to be definitive. But I mean, this looks like a very nice way to start a 3-year-old year.
Yeah, I think probably in general. The problem with the wet tracks aren't necessarily the winners. They're more some also-rans, you know?
Yeah.
I think you look at them and you think, you know, there might have been horses that may have run better had the track, you know, had the track been faster than he could do at the rain. I don't think that deterministic is some sort of wet freak. You're talking about a horse that ran an 81 buyer in his debut, going 7 furlongs, you know, the second week of August, where there was a time we never even ran 7 furlongs that early in the year. And it's not like, you know, he won sitting on the pace and he, you know, ran one of those front running impressive races. And most of the sort of faster pigs you see for 2-year-olds are those kind of races. And which is not to say those horses can't be good horses, but those are the kind of races you see. And in his case, he didn't break. He ran down a speed horse who, you know, got a 94 buyer's next start. Or 91 buyer, from 80 to 91, he ran an 84, so even if the 91 was a little on the high side, he still improved. Other horses kind of the race went well also, so it was a legitimate race. And, you know, he was wide, he made a big run, he was determined. And, you know, then he comes out with a bit of an issue, and, you know, but he's come back and been trading very well. He's been trading with Pandagate, who ran an 86 buyer, winning the stake, this New York Red stake on Sunday. You know, it was all there. I mean, if you could look at that 81 and say 7 furlongs, first time, trouble, certainly could be an 87. You know what I mean? Or something. So the fact that he runs 93, because back, all it really means is, you know, he's sound and he's taken a little bit of a step forward, as most horses do from 2 to 3. So I don't think his performance, frankly, is that surprising. It's a relief, I'm sure, to them, but not shocking. And it's always a question of whether or not these horses are going to be most proficient at a mile and a quarter. And the truth is that very few of them actually are. Having said that, he absolutely belongs in the conversation with the horses not named Nisos. And, you know, obviously Fierceness has to come back and show that that was some sort of aberrant effort. And we're only going to get the one race to see it. Because, you know, Fierceness still is out there as a horse that has the big fig last year that on his day can run a very big race. It's obviously you have to be skeptical now at this point, but that doesn't mean it's not out there. And other than that, right, I mean, Sierra Leone got a 90. buyer, and he looks really good. He looks like a horse that's certainly not got any problem with distance. Timberlake got a 93 buyer. He looks good. I wonder how efficient he'll be going longer, but he's obviously very talented. Who am I leaving out? I mean, Track Phantom's been good. Unfortunately, there just aren't California horses because of the Baffert situation, and nobody else out there seems to have a horse that you can even have a conversation about particularly. So right now, I think that Predetermined belongs in the conversation with the possible, players in the Derby. No, we'll see what happens in Tampa Bay, though, this weekend, and then we'll see what happens in the final round of preps. There's a lot of racing left to come.
100%.
You're going to Tampa, right?
I'll be there, yeah.
Boy, they must be excited.
Well, that's me and Dave Grenning.
Yeah, I know, Dave. I know. Wow. That's pretty exciting. Two bright, shining stars of turfdom.
You mentioned the horses that ran behind Deterministic. And one thing is notable on this chart, and that is that the horses that were 1, 2, 3, 4, after a half mile, they end up 4-3-2-1 or 3-1-4-2, whatever it is.
Well, that's the reason that you wonder a little about the ones in back. You know, a horse like Capital Idea, who ran okay to get fifth.
Yes.
I would not write that horse off at all. I think that horse has real talent. But at this point, I think it would be foolish to be thinking Derby with him. But I don't think there's any reason you can't think, Allowance, Peter Pan, Belmont Stakes. If you want to be overly optimistic. Because I do think he's a good horse. And I'm not going to be surprised when at some point he's a player in some big three-year-old race. And I think he's probably one horse out of that race that you feel you want to give another chance to.
I liked him going in. I knew he was going to be a fun price.
What I like about him.
Yeah.
Good. No, I agree. I think he's an interesting horse going forward. And El Grande O ran his usual good race, a mile's just a little far. I know they're talking about trying the wood. And if they want to press forward, go for it. But, he was only second in the Withers because the track bias helped him so much. And I'm looking forward to seeing the Withers winner come back, and I'd love to hope these preps are running fast tracks, the last ones, so we can also get an idea on that. So many have been running wet tracks. But and the second horse, Just a Touch, I think there's a difference between, with Deterministic, it was more about the layoff. But Christophe has very good numbers off layoffs. And he's also not exactly the kind of guy that you expect to put a horse in that race like that unless he was training well enough to belong. It's not like the owners were forcing him to run there. If they'd run an Allowance, I'm sure it would have been fine. If he didn't make the Derby, it would have been fine. You're trying to do what's right for the horse. And with Just a Touch, he's coming a month after winning 6-furlong race in the Slop. That's actually a lot different. And while I think he's very talented, and I understand the argument that maybe he was the likeliest winner of that race, he was probably more like a 4-to-1 shot. And he said they're just bad gambles at 8-to-5. It doesn't mean he's not a good horse. It doesn't mean that if somebody says, all I'm trying to do is pick the winner of the race, you would criticize them for picking the horse. But I think from a betting standpoint, those kind of horses are always overhyped, especially when they're from a barn like Brad's. The reality, I talked to Florent Giroux. I ran in the jocks room earlier in the day when I was getting some food. I ran to him, catching up for a while. And he said, he was excited about it. But he said, it's a big ask. He wasn't, he just said it's a big ask to go from the 6 to a mile in a situation like this. And I thought he ran very well. I don't think there's any reason to be disappointed in him. If you like him, if you're his connections, I think they should be happy the performance he put in. It's a lot. It's those horses historically don't win those races. A big difference between the two-year-olds, most of them making their second or third start, going from a maiden to a stake, because they're all in the same situation. And I know you can say it about Deterministic, but Deterministic also ran his figure a long time ago. And if you put the trouble in there, he kind of ran as fast a number as Just a Touch did.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think this is going to be, using El Grando as the baseline, this is a very solid running of the Gotham.
I think El Grande O is a terrific horse. I'm a big fan of his. I just think ultimately, 7 Ace is going to be where he can, he would win the Mike Lee the day after the Belmont Stakes if that's where they're going. And, I'm not so sure he's not a horse that they shouldn't be considering for races like the Amsterdam and the Alan Jerkins later in the year.
Yeah.
I think he's really good. I just don't believe he's going to be really good going longer.
Yeah, there aren't too many. There aren't too many horses right now in this current age of ours that have run 11 times and have hit the board
right.
10.
Right.
And you know, and virtually what he's been first or second. He had 8 placements. He's got 9 placements in 11 starts, essentially. Only the champagne went awry. And he's been just...
He shows up every time and runs well. I didn't think he'd run well in here. I was really impressed by him. I was surprised too. He took a lot of money, and I thought that it was wrong, and it wasn't wrong. It was right.
Yeah, this was a fun running of the Gotham, and
I love the Gotham.
Yeah,
I love 100 miles like that and stuff. It's listen, Race Kane. Now Race Kane won a stake later in the year, and he's not really a distance horse, but he's a good horse. I wouldn't be surprised if he, is a factor at some point this year. I don't think he's run since the Malibu, right?
No. Although I saw something written about him not that long ago.
I'm glad to hear you're reading, Steve. I think that's really it's a big deal.
Well, if I don't read the DRF guys, I get a why do we write this? Whenever you ask them that question.
Dave doesn't do that with me. I read a lot of Dave's stuff, but I miss things occasionally.
Yeah,
I'm a little busy. I don't get upset when he doesn't listen to me on TV. I don't get upset if anybody doesn't listen to me on TV. I'd mute me too.
before we talk about the other races, in New York. I want to stick with the three-year-olds for a minute, but you also, you mentioned the Belmont Stakes. What's your reaction? Dave O'Rourke's going to join me tomorrow, 9:15, to talk about the governor's press release and update, status update. Your impressions of the...
This is the first I've seen of any drawings.
Right.
I think it's extremely exciting. The whole project to me is extremely exciting.
Yeah.
And I loved what I saw. And Nick Tamaro said to me he saw a lot of Arlington in it, which I think is fair, though I haven't been to Arlington in a long, long last time I was at Arlington was 1990 when I was in Chicago's City of the Dead at the World Amphitheater. Brent Millen's last shows, which I'm sure you knew. but he died 5 days later, I think. They were great shows. I also think it's the last time that Jerry Garcia played The Wolf at a live show. But anyway, something you also probably knew. It's a famous guitar. I have a picture of it on Twitter. It was on display at the Met with those rock guitars. Anyway, I thought it was really just looks good. It's a good old thing. It's exciting, And I think it just, it looks. I had, maybe there's a little feel of like an Ascot or tracks like that. They were built there and, great, open air sort of light sight lines front and back. One of the things that's funny is, Dave O'Rourke has been complaining to me since basically he got an office in the executive area at Belmont. He has been complaining to me, and he's right, that Belmont was mislaid out. Where so much of the best viewing in the grandstand were given to employees. The third floor, think of the office I had, think when I was in marketing, then I was next door before I moved up the roof. The roof, office also was not a public area. So, but it was a great office, but whatever, but still, forgetting about that, just saying, why are the, we should all be in the basement. We work there. We're not supposed to be taking away space from, where customers can look at things. And like, you ever been in the executive offices at Belmont, the old Belmont? Maybe you haven't even been in there.
I have.
They're on the first main floor, the second floor, and they're overlooking the paddock. And everybody has paddock views. Most of the paddock views in Belmont Park from the building were offices of, not all of them, but most of them. And he always complained to me and said, this is just built all wrong. And so I think one of the many things this will address is that the fans, wherever they are, will be able to see the paddock.
The building, and I'm anxious for some people that have any interest in art and design to comment as opposed to complete, complete loons. The building has, do you know Eero Saarinen's work at all?
I only know Eero because he's a crossword puzzle answer.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, his first name is a good word.
Sure. Well,
Eero.
The two E's, Eero.
Yeah, that's it.
Eero. Yeah, Eero, exactly. It's got a real Wings of Man, Eero Saarinen line to it. It's incredibly handsome. And
this notion of people saying, I understand. Listen, by the way, people have an attachment to somewhere, and I understand the change can be hard for some people, though. I'm going to be perfectly honest. The vast majority of people, social media, if you believe what you read on social media, you believe a lot of crazy things. And I'm going to say the vast majority of people rarely, if ever, went to Belmont. I think that this is an incredibly positive step forward, and I imagine the vast majority of people will feel that way. And I even think and hope that people who look at it go, like that, or whatever it is, and people are free to believe whatever they want. They'll end up turning around when they get a chance to go there. But the truth is, paddock areas. What are the nice paddock areas that we know in racing? Well, Delaware Park. You know why Delaware Park's nice, and it is nice? Because it's outdoors, and it's often nice weather down there. The day that we were all there, right?
Yeah.
Any nice paddock in an outdoorsy area was going to be a nice place to be, right? There were trees, there were grass. I think the Belmont paddock will be very, very nice. It seems like there's a lot of viewing space for it.
And by the way, I think you'll appreciate this. If we think back to the footprint when it became clear how UBS was going to be constructed, and there was all this bloodletting and teeth gnashing over the loss of the park. And as it turns out, there's going to be more park space when this is done than there was pre-UBS.
To be fair, there was more backyard space given away than was necessary. So there was a bit of a legitimate complaint about the loss of some of the backyard when UBS came in. Nothing against the UBS arena. They weren't the ones that did. Having said that, I agree with you. This will give us more space. And also don't forget, there will be space on the infield too.
Yep.
And the thing about that infield space also is, it's space that the community can use as well. There are a lot of pluses. Yeah. And remember something. Almost part of the community. It's part of the community in Long Island. And the better neighbors you are, and the more access you give the community, the better the whole situation is, right?
Yep.
You want to be a good neighbor to the places you are. You're there. It's like Saratoga. It's the symbiotic relationship between the town and the track.
Yeah.
Where each of us feed on the other one. Neither would exist, really, without the other one.
100%.
You could say racing is the engine that drives it, but the fact that there's a vibrant downtown in Saratoga, ex the police trying to, screw people in parking spots, which is disgraceful, it sort of goad people into parking places where they could give them tickets a minute later. None of that happened to me last week. it's preposterous. And a lot of people have experienced this in Saratoga. I think there's people who are probably listening and laughing, knowing they've been through it too. But the reality is that it has a great downtown, and that's one of the things that makes it so. The relationship between the track and downtown is really a very special one, and everything's so close together. But while Elmont may be a little different, it doesn't mean we're not a community partner. The more we do with community, the better everything is, and the more important Belmont becomes.
Well said. All right, back to the action.
Is Packen on to talk about it?
Tomorrow.
Wow, that's going to be exciting.
Well, Dave, actually, we got Dave tomorrow.
Dave O'Rourke. Wow. That must be really exciting.
Yes. Yeah.
I expect some hard-hitting questions from you. Anyway. Well, you should ask him about the executive weights and stuff, because I'm serious. It's something that he's been saying that to me forever.
Well,
and he was also I benefited from it too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Rich Mig says that's one of his great concerns is that he loses the fabulous office view.
I would have a different. Well, he's not going to have enough. I would even see, I love Richie, but my concern would be that I did have that kind of office.
I'm you know, I
we won't have offices in the, like, there. The offices should be in the basement like they are at Aqua, period.
Are you concerned about this? You know, I see Rich's nocturnal wanderings through Belmont Park when he stays in the cottage. And I'm a little concerned that he's going to chain himself to the building when the wrecking ball comes. He's going to be one of those people.
No.
I'm kidding. I'm just...
not concerned about that at all.
No.
Richie's the good kind of crazy. It's like the rest of us.
He's gonna be tough. He loves.
He'll be fine.
You know.
He'll be fine.
Before we ask about Florida and California, Jody's pride. I know a lot of people were trying to figure out a way to go against her, and that's a good return.
Well, she was 4-5, so a lot of the money was on her.
You know what I mean.
TZ has never won a Grand Stake.
Who hasn't?
Jorge Abreu.
TT has, okay, gotcha. Okay.
He's never won a Grand Stake.
That's weird, actually, because he's won his handful of stakes. Huh. That's interesting. He'll get it. He'll get one soon.
Well, she'll be in the Gazelle. You know, it'll be interesting to see if goes to the Gazelle. No, I was thrilled to see her back, and I love the interview that one of the owners did with Maggie after the race. I thought, if you had him on, you should look at the interview and get him on. He was great. I mean, he was incredibly excited, but incredibly realistic, you know, and really complimentary of TT, and it was just a really, you know, there's that saying, right? You know, the old Frankel saying, you want to find out about somebody, give them a good horse.
That's right.
And, you know, when you see somebody like Buck Butler being interviewed after My Main Squeeze won, and, you know, it's fun. For me, also on our show, I don't know a lot of these owners, and they get interviewed on the show, and you get to see who they are. You've seen their names in the program so often, and he was great. And showing up My Main Squeeze, who she could be the favorite, the Gazelle. She's run 88 and 89 buyers in her last two starts. And he's talking about how the race he always really wanted to win was the Black Eyed Susan.
Nice. You're talking about the guy from Parkland, Thoroughbreds.
No. Yes. On the show. Yes. On the show Saturday.
Steve Weston.
Yeah. He was great.
Yeah. No,
he was really, really. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know him at all. But I thought he was great.
Nice.
That was exciting. I'll tell you what. I think we may have seen the best three-year-old filly that's run so far in 2024 at Oaklawn in the fourth race on Sunday.
Impel.
Yeah, the Judd Monroe. You know, I'd forgotten. Do you know where Dam is?
Did not notice.
I think it's your song? I'll get it.
I actually have it here.
Your love.
The flatter mare.
Do you know who? Well, if you look up the thing, you'll see. She was a punk horse. Chad had her. He reminded me of that yesterday. And that was why, but it was a Pompa horse.
Nice.
He must have bought it at Paul's first. Obviously, we miss Paul, and he left us way too early. Nonetheless, it's nice to see people live on through their horses, you know?
No doubt.
And Paul was such a wonderful guy. I mean, you know, in a game where there's way too much animosity, Paul's a guy. It's hard to find anybody who didn't like Paul. And I think a lot of people had similar experience with Paul that I did, which is that Paul introduced himself to me in Belmont years ago, and it may have been before I was on the show, because I love Backseat Rhythm.
Me too.
And do you know why we liked Backseat Rhythm originally? Do you remember who touted us on her first?
No.
Somebody who didn't used to be an asshole, but now is. did Cedar Five for a long work. And I think he would say, well, I always was, I just hit it better. That she had worked really, really well, especially for a big leggy horse. She ran second, I think, to Indian Blessing in the Breeders' Cup, right? She was really good in turf and dirt.
Yeah, she was. She was a favorite too.
Yeah, I loved her. I remember she won the Lake Placid and made $13. That was a great day. That Impel, I think she had a 91 buyer. It wasn't, you know, it's not just that it was a fast race. She crushed those horses. And that was not a bad field that she was in. They were okay. But they may not be major, major stake winners going forward, but they were 75 to 80 already buyer type horses. She just dismissed them like they were claimers.
Yeah, that Tanya Showers of Chris Hartman's.
The horse her in second had broken her maiden and looked good. The horse inside of her had run okay. There was the Astley's horse broken her maiden the time before and got the front end.
Yep.
You know, anyway, yeah, she looked very good. I imagine they'll probably go to the Ashland.
Well, they could stay and run the Fantasy.
Brad doesn't run that much at Oakland, does he?
No.
He runs so much more at Fairgrounds.
He does.
I'll bet you they'll go.
Although that was his 56th start at the meet.
Okay, so he's running 1.5 horses a day.
Okay.
Less. No, shame, right? I think it was like the 33rd day of the meet. Maybe it left. Okay, so he's running a couple horses a day. But, I mean, I think a lot of people think he has a bigger presence, right? He's got a lot of horses.
Well, and Judmont would be more interested in the Ashland.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Than the Fantasy, for sure. For sure. Yeah, 8 length.
I mean, so he's got two good horses. He's got that horse for Godolphin. What's her name? That won the Silver Bullet Day, or Rachel Alexandra.
That's right. No, well,
there are two pretty good horses, Silver Bullet Day. And Silver Bullet Day is a horse that probably doesn't get the respect that she deserves. They don't look at her past PPs sometimes.
Oh, they were tremendous. There was the giveaway. There was a Saratoga giveaway. Remember a Silver Bullet Day plate?
Really?
Yeah.
Somebody brought me a giveaway of a glass for Devil's Bag Champagne. My friend Brian brought it.
Oh, my God.
I got it Saturday out of my desk. Yeah, it's great.
I've got the Silver Bullet Day plate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you guys eat off it?
No.
Do you have a full set of Silver Bullet Day dinnerware?
Let me get a couple more in here. The Kinetic Sky by a nose in the Stymie.
Got a great ride from Lascano.
Lascano's riding good.
He always rides well. When does Jose not ride well? Seriously. He's as reliable a rider as is in New York. He doesn't have those big win days. You know, he doesn't ride for the top outfits as much. But anybody that watches Jose ride day in and day out knows that he's one of the best riders in the country. He's a super rider. Seriously, he's just a low-key guy, kind of, that you just don't, you know. And he's not going to win that many of the biggest races, but he's a terrific rider.
And finally, in fact, my next guest, after we wrap, Maddie Alver, Super Chow. And she's now won 2 graded stakes in a row.
You know, it's 11:33. She really deserves at least 27 minutes in the show, don't you think?
She will get everything necessary. But before, I can see you're trying to rush yourself off.
No, I'm fine.
A real quick survey down here and California. Some thoughts. Obviously, the Fountain of Youth went sideways.
Yeah, I feel bad. You know, you hate, especially for fans and people that call, you know, you have just FYI. You know, I mean, listen, and the thing is, every one of us that works in racing has been there and had a race fall apart. Now, I've obviously never seen this kind of, you know, disaster on race day with, you know, what looked like it was going to be a really interesting group of, you know, 4 particularly good horses for 3 of them. One of them, the post parade, it was just an incredible amount of bad luck. And nobody takes pleasure. Anybody takes pleasure in that, there's something wrong with them. I like to make fun of Gulfstream as much as anybody, but I take no pleasure in that. And you know, the fans want to see it as well. And I think we all wanted to see. And, you know, I mean, I know that you and I shared some skepticism about Locked, but we wanted to see him come back. You want to see him in there. He's a good horse. And Speakeasy had run well in his maiden race. You know, maybe with a horse like Speakeasy, you kind of hope, if you want to take an optimistic viewpoint, that instead of being rushed along towards the Derby, maybe he ends up taking a more conservative route, and they could still get him to a race like the Belmont. Maybe it'll be a blessing in disguise, you know? Maybe he'll end up being really good later in the year, and the connections will say, you know, looking back on it. You hope that. You like want to be optimistic, because I'm sure it's incredibly disappointing. As far as Door Knock, I don't have much of an opinion on him, honestly. He ran fine. Wasn't that fast a race to do what he had to do. We'll see how he does getting there. I thought, as I said, I thought he ran very well in the Remsen. you know, there's no reason to say Sierra Leone didn't run well, but I thought that he probably ran a little better. Yeah, he was on the best part of the track, but it was a pretty good pace, and he ran extremely well in there. So he could be a good horse. We'll see. As far as California, honestly, Steve, I didn't watch that much.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not going to pay much attention to horses that they're just not going to be allowed in the Derby, right?
Well, they're going to, but I mean, they'll be participants in everything else.
Yeah, no, and I'll get involved in looking at them more when I have to.
Did you see Conquest Warrior on Friday?
I saw he got an 84 buyer.
He paired up, yeah.
I mean, he's going to have to get better. I think he's got some talent, but he's going to have to get faster. He's a Shug horse, so he probably will. But, you know, Shug's probably not inclined to be pushing along too much, do you think?
Well, he's going to Florida Derby. He'll get his opportunity.
Okay.
Opportunity there. And
he's a is he a Cortland horse?
Yes, he is. Don Adam.
Yeah. All right.
Don Adam.
I liked his maiden win, but to be honest, I didn't really pay that much attention to it, Steve. I just don't watch their races that much.
I hear you. Well, the
which is sad, by the way.
Yeah.
To be honest, because I used to look so forward to that meet. I mean, even when I worked, you know, probably my first 5 or 6 years in IRA, I spent as much time looking at those races as our races in the winter, but not anymore.
Well, one thing that's been considering how certain things ebb and flow. It'd be nice maybe to revisit this giant super uber. Crazy days. I wish that, you know, we could go back to spreading the stakes out a little bit more. And
I'm going to say something. Of all the problems in racing, where does that really lie?
Well, it. I'll say this. It does have potential. When you concentrate all these big days and everything is
I'll ask you a question this way, not to interrupt. And I don't have an answer to this question. Belmont Park reopens. Would it be something that we should be discussing? And I've never thought of this. I'm just sort of throwing it out there. You know, do we want to make sure that every weekend at Belmont Park there is a big race? And do we want to go back to spreading those races out more when we reopen the new Belmont Park?
My answer is yes.
I'm not saying we don't, you know. I think one of the problems with the Met Mile and this argument of the Met Mile belongs on Memorial Day, which is just, you know, ridiculous. But there's a bigger argument it belongs to the biggest day of the year. It doesn't work on the 31st, on Memorial Day the way it used to. Because the biggest feeder race of it is going to be that Churchill Downs handicap. And you don't want to run a Met Mile 3 weeks after. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair.
So there's an argument that it works better on the calendar where it is now. So that's a discussion that's worth having. But that doesn't mean that we can't do it. We can't change things and spread them out more. I'm not saying we should or shouldn't, but I think it's something that I don't have an opinion on it. You know, I could be, frankly, it's not my job to have an opinion on it. And I don't like to tell people in my company that work in different departments how they should be doing their jobs, because I don't want them telling me how I should do my job, nor should they.
Huh.
Having said that, I just think it's not the worst thing since we announced the plans for the new Belmont. You know, it's probably a discussion worth having.
Yeah, there's two things at work here. The you know, these 14 race cards.
They're rough.
It's too much. It doesn't behoove anybody. But the problem is everybody is so caught up about how was the handle versus last year? Nobody wants to cut back from.
Well, of course, absolutely. It's like that thing. Once you get to a certain point, you never want to cut back because you don't want to take the hit. Listen, I believe that we should start at least one, if not two, Sundays at the meet. In Saratoga at 11 o'clock in the morning. I believe that. I don't love that because I don't like getting up earlier in the morning. But, and that would preclude me having breakfast with my mom that day, which, you know, would ruin my whole day. But because people leave so early on Sundays, and I think if you start at 11, let's try it, you know?
It's an interesting
11, 11:30.
It's a very
interesting. And then the card ends at 4:30 or something, 4 to 4:30. a lot of people would find they would stay longer.
That's a great point.
And, you know, they're also, you know, I think the question was starting earlier, and, you know, with all of these, something like that is, you have to ask the horsemen. You know, you don't want to tax the backstretch. People in the backstretch, they work hard enough. You know, is it feasible for them? Some of them may love it. Makes their day shorter. I don't have the answer. I don't work on the backstretch. But I think these are reasonable conversations to have.
That's a fascinating suggestion. Has that been floated? Has that made the rounds?
It's been floated. I've talked to, I, it's been brought up. It's actually not originally my idea. You have to be careful. First of all, it's also not my department. I don't tell Naira how to run their, contrary to what other people believe, I don't tell Naira how to run their business. I have opinions on a lot of things and I like to express them, but I don't at work. I don't, you know, I wait till I'm asked. You get a lot more if you wait for somebody to ask you your opinion than you constantly tell them the way they should run their business. There are a lot of things going well at Naira that they don't need me to tell them how to do it. If they want my opinion, they'll ask me. But I think things like that are worth at least experimenting with.
It makes a lot of sense. People that are going to be driving back to Boston, back to Buffalo, back to
I'm there.
New York. Yeah.
I see it. You know, yep. I see how yep. get quiet it gets later in the day and on Sundays. And I don't think it's, you know, breakfast at Saratoga, right? Yep. You know, in other words, forget about coming to breakfast at Saratoga, you know. I don't know. I just think it's worth at least discussing briefly.
That's fresh. We need fresh thinking.
Well, I mean, I think the game needs to be willing, and this has always been the case, and it's on all of us. We all get a little bit stuck in our routines, right? And you just get comfortable in your routine. It's true in life. It's not just horse racing, you know? And there's a lot of people think we should, you know, these people who say, you know, I read people the soul of Belmont. Let me tell you something. There aren't a lot of people been at Belmont Park a lot more than I have in the last 40 years. And I love my times at Belmont, but mostly it's just a big empty place.
And, you know, and cold.
Cold and empty, yeah. All right. Yeah, now you've cut Maddie now down to 15
no,
minutes.
No, she cut. She was in a meeting. She said to me,
to a meeting? Really?
She had a meeting with a client.
Wow.
So
she's on the show for the first time. She's already just sort of dismissing you?
Yeah, I guess
wow.
so. Is she a bond
wow.
trader? Does she trade?
Does she not realize what a big opportunity this is to be on the Steve Bick Show?
Does she trade?
Does she realize the greatness that many have achieved by appearing on the Steve Bick Show? Shame on her.
But
so
I got.
When is she coming on?
Right now.
11:53?
No, at 11:40.
Really, can I do this? Maybe I should learn from Maddie. All right, Steve. See you later.
Andy Serling, everybody. Oh, my God. He is the greatest. Contrary to some opinions, he's very critical and discerning about the industry. Maddie Oliver is going to join us. And Andy Serling was very concerned that I wasn't leaving you enough time, but I explained that you were kind of tied up and it was
absolutely.
It was by choice. I'm so happy for you and everybody is. These back-to-back rated stake wins. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much.
I
appreciate that.
Not at all. I was telling Richie on Monday. We were there last a week ago Sunday for our horse's debut, and my wife is. We were up in the stands, and she looks down and she says, "Who is that? Who's that tiny thing?" I said, "That's Maddie Oliver." And she goes, "Oh my God." She said, have you had her on the show? I said, "I have not had her on the show yet. Siaka had gotten you a couple of wins and I missed the chance to do it then. But then with these graded stakes successes with Super Chow. I wasn't going to miss an opportunity. and you've been, you know, you've really made so many friends and fans, you know, not just with the riding and with this success, but, you know, the things that you said the other day about mental health and, you know, jockey well-being. And you've really polished and professional, and you've been a wonderful addition to the scene.
Oh, thank you so much. That means the world.
Tell us about your background and, you know, what has gotten you to this point.
Well, I grew up in Colorado. I learned how to gallop race horses in France. Never really intended on making it a career at the beginning. I just didn't think that that was within the realm of possibilities. I graduated with my bachelor's degree from Colorado State University, and then started working again for Christophe Clément in Saratoga. Stayed with them for about 2 years, and they set me up with my first agent at Aqueduct. And that was it. Just kept going.
And now a multiple graded stake winning jockey. what were you doing? And I did see where you worked for Gina Rarick in France.
Yeah.
What got you? Why were you in France?
Because I lived there as a kid with my family for my mom's job, and I feel very comfortable there, and I knew that I wanted to go back. And so she was kind enough to give me an opportunity to, you know, I had grown up riding horses, and she gave me an opportunity to learn how to gallop race horses. And yeah, I just fell in love with it. And, you know, I'm still in contact with her. She was the one that gave me my, you know, original start. And, yeah, and then ended up back here in the States.
Well, and you seem well on your way at this point.
Thank you. I hope so.
Well, and you're, and obviously, and I know Joe Migliori had you for a while. You talk about, you know, the early part of your career where you had the book. You're booking your own mounts, right?
Yeah, yeah.
No, which is ambitious in itself.
Yeah.
And obviously getting on horses in the morning.
Yes,
you're,
definitely.
You're, you know, in terms of physique and weight, you're, you know, you're naturally light and, you know.
Yeah, thank God.
Right, the right size. So this, you can do this as long, I would imagine, as you care to.
That's the plan. That is absolutely the plan.
I love it. I know Richie. You know, Richie has helped you. You know, talk about who, you know, who you listen to and who takes you aside and you know is helping you. You know, round. I mean, to stick around New York and ride successfully and get these kinds of calls. You know, that's a compliment in itself. You know, but you're still. You know, you're still young and developing. Let me see. You've had just under 500 career rides so far, 54 wins.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, you know, to win, Maddie, to win two graded stakes, you know, before you've ridden 500 mounts, I wouldn't think that a lot of young riders, you know, score that quickly. You know, the graded stake wins come that fast.
No, I'm just very lucky that I had the connections that were willing to give me an opportunity with a really fantastic horse. And I'm always grateful, and I'm very grateful for that, and I always will be. So that's, you know, definitely a testament to who, you know, the owners and the trainer are, as both people and professionals, that they were willing to give me that opportunity. And you know, even though I have had opportunities on him in the past and have gotten beat on him in the past, that they let me keep trying, which is huge. That's what we all need, is we all need the horse.
That's true. Back to advice and, you know, improving areas. I mean, what do you recognize or acknowledge are areas that, you know, you want to improve, and you know, who do you seek out? Who's mentoring you?
I mean, always Richie and his son, who is my first agent, Joe Migliori. They can watch a race and analyze it better than anybody I've ever met, and are also very capable of giving an honest review of what potentially could have been improved or what, you know, maybe was out of my control. They're always offering advice and insight into areas in which they would do this for anybody, you know, areas in which I could improve or things to learn. And I guess that's kind of the beauty of the job, is you are always learning, and you can think you know everything about horses, and then there's one that's going to prove you wrong the day after. But I'm very lucky in that I feel like anybody that I ask for advice would be very happy to help me and tell me and, you know, want to see me improve.
How do your family and friends, how do they view this? I mean, because it does sound like it is something of a, you know, serendipitous career, essentially, that you didn't necessarily plan it, but here you are. And, you know, I assume your family is still in Colorado.
Yeah. And they're not from the racing world at all. No. So it's a bit of a foreign concept to most of my friends and family, but they're incredibly supportive in both the highs and the lows, always have been. My brother actually got to be there for the Tom Fool. And it was the first time he had gotten to see me ride. So that was very special. And the fact that he took time out of his life to come see what's going on in my life is very important to me and meant a lot. And, you know, even if they're not going to be able to offer advice on riding or anything specific with the business aspect of the industry, they're all very happy for me, incredibly supportive, in both the highs and the lows, which is the most important part.
The danger aspect. How do you answer your folks when they, you know, and they might, you know, they must see. I mean, they've got to see, you know, jockeys hit the ground.
Well, my mom's been watching me hit the ground from horses for a while, so she's
okay.
A little bit.
There
she's
you
pretty
go.
Used to it. But they know that it's a part of it, and it's, you know, it's always a risk. And as long as you're taking the necessary precautions, you know, like safe helmets, safe gear, disability insurance, et cetera, then, you know, you could also, in theory, there's also a very high risk of just simply driving a car.
Yeah.
So true. If you're going to take a risk, it might as well be something that you really love and are really truly passionate about.
Winning in New York at this level, I mean, that part of it is, you know, a whole different challenge. And a lot of times, you know, once you lose the apprentice allowances,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, it gets tougher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of goals, how are you managing, you know, your aspirations?
I mean, but listen, it's been hard since the beginning. I don't think that there's any point in which, I mean, I know it does get tougher, but in certain ways, I think it could also get, a little bit easier, like managing weight and all, you know, specifically that aspect. And, it's always been hard, and it always will be hard because it's a hard job and it's a hard business. And I think the only thing that I can do is just keep trying.
You're out in the mornings knocking on
absolutely.
Doors?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You'll get,
absolutely.
Love it.
Oh, yeah. Getting on as many as I can in the morning, for sure.
What about living in New York?
It's definitely an adjustment. It's been an adjustment. I feel like I'm still adjusting. But it's... I've developed an affection for it, for sure.
Do you like New York or better than Paris or no?
In different ways, I do, yes. In different ways, I absolutely do.
Love it.
Okay. I absolutely do. Because I love Aqueduct, ultimately. So that's the most important part of New York to me.
Well, and now that you say that, I it occurs to me to think back to Saratoga, right? Because it was only the one summer, the only last summer that you rode so far at Saratoga.
I did not. I rode at Monmouth last summer.
You spent the summer at Monmouth. Okay.
I did, yeah.
All right. Well, which we love.
Yes, it was great. I had a great meet there.
All right. So you're waiting. So you'll be looking for your first Saratoga mount, maybe at...
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cannot wait.
All right.
Cannot wait.
What else do you want people to know about Matty Oliver?
Oh, gosh. That's a tough question. I mean, I think that pretty much covers it. I'm just very, very, very grateful, and I'm very happy to get to do something that I love every single day and meet a lot of really interesting people, really fascinating people that also really love the horses and love what they're doing. And I'm just so grateful.
Well, you're doing great. And
thank you.
Not at all. Super Chow will be your favorite. Will certainly be your favorite horse for a while.
Absolutely, right? He will. Absolutely, he will. He might have that. He might have that title for forever since he was the original one.
Well, I'm sure Richie told you somewhere along the line when he was an aspiring rider, the toboggan was the race that he wanted to win more than any other.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did tell
right?
me that.
And that, that he knew he arrived when he got a mount in the toboggan, and it ends up being your first graded stake. And the Tom Fool is historic. You're doing super.
Yeah, and I knew that story too before I rode in it, and so that was extra special for me because Richie's been really great.
Matty Oliver, and there's no I in there. It's Olver.
Exactly.
Andy jumped on me a few weeks ago when I made it sound like you were an urchin, you were an orphan urchin in a workhouse in England.
He's looking out for me.
Everybody is. Matty,
I know.
Well done. I really appreciate the visit.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it as well.
Not at all. Matty Oliver and two graded stake wins and doing great in New York. Andy Serling earlier. Keith Shamblin with some NHC updates. Jason Blewett hung out with Mike Welch. There's our Tuesday get-together. Wednesday at Tampa. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. They'll draw tomorrow. Tampa Bay Derby and the undercard. Thanks to everybody here, Dave Joseph and the team at Gulfstream Park for another winter. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. A reminder, you got those two stakes at Philly that are actually well worth looking at. And I'll talk to you tomorrow from the other side of the state. Alligator Alley. Or maybe I'll go up by the lake. Maybe we'll take the Okeechobee route. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
So we have a premiere.
It is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
PA Bred, I think we've built a brand. At this point,
the state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Carabelle in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
We're racing 2-year-olds in California and Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
on. How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions. And offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.